Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Let's get it. Welcome to the Dear Son Show. We have meaningful conversations about life through the lens of fatherhood. It's forefathers, those with fathers, and the fatherless, so nobody's left out. These are the conversations I want my sons to access as they grow through life and in manhood, so no topics are off limits. Your only host today, D. Johns, but we got an amazing guest. Corey L. Hughes is in the building. How you feeling, my brother?
Man, I'm feeling good, man. I'm excited to be here, man.
Glad to have you here.
Yeah, man. This fatherhood thing is huge, man.
Yeah.
You know, I often say, man, one of the greatest deposits that you can make is into the next generation.
Absolutely.
And as a father, that's into your son.
Yeah.
And so, man, I'm excited to be here, man.
Absolutely. I'm glad you said that, man, because whether you're intentional about it or not, you're making a deposit.
That's a fact.
Now, what they can withdraw from it, that leaves a lot to be desired if you're not intentional about what you're doing. So we're gonna get into it, man. But I like to start and make sure that the guests are actually in a good headspace when we start. How you feeling?
Man, I'm good, man. Okay. I'm really good, man. You got my head spinning already.
Just okay.
Thinking about, you know, some of the things that you just said.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about my experience with my father and how I want that experience to be completely different, or how I've orchestrated that experience to be different with my son.
Sure.
So, man, I'm in a good headspace, man. You know, just here, man. Business as well, family as well. You know, God is good, man.
Yeah, let's get into a little bit of that, because there's some of my audience has been under a rock, so they might not know who you are. You know, the masses know who you are, but let's help them understand who Corey is. Where you from, man?
Man, I'm from Chicago, Illinois.
Oh.
So I'm Chicago born, but I'm Texas raised.
Yeah, okay. Because I ain't screening when he came in. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know if he came in with a stick.
No.
That's unfair. Chicago, I love you.
Yeah, well, I love Chicago too.
Yeah.
But I don't go back very often.
Be aware. How long were you say you were Dallas raised?
Yeah, I'm pretty much Dallas raised. Went to high school here, man. And
okay.
Most of my roots are here. My family is in Chicago. My history is in Chicago. But what I really call home is Texas.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What was the dynamics in the house growing up? Who was in there?
So, you know, my mom and my dad, you know, they were, you know, married. And then I had my mom and dad had a total of 6 children together. And so it was mom and dad and then my 5 siblings. Well, actually, I take that back. It was mom, dad, and my 3 siblings. Cause my mom had 2 stillborn twins,
okay.
Her twins were stillborn. And so, but yeah, man, I came up it was wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just put it like that. It was wild. Yeah.
What do you remember most about, your interactions with your father in the house?
My father was angry. Yeah. He was an angry man. I got more. Well, that's crazy. I got more negativity from my father than I did life lessons.
Gotcha.
And although the negativity was negative, they were still life lessons. I just had to kind of filter it through my own experience and knowledge of what a father really is.
Right.
So, yeah, man, it was rough coming up in my house.
Is he still alive?
No, man, my father passed away about 10 years ago now.
Gotcha. How did that impact you? The anger, his demeanor, his character, how did it show up in your life, throughout life?
Man, I tell you, it really impacted me when I started playing sports. Cause I had a major issue with authority. You know, my coaches couldn't tell me nothing because I had kind of metastasized the pain from my father and it turned into anger. So any man or any figure of authority that reminded my father I had an issue with. So I had an issue with the police. I had an issue with coaches. I had an issue with the principal because my father wasn't there, you know, and when he was there, you know, he wasn't the nicest guy. And so my version of manhood really develop from anger and fear at the same time.
Gotcha.
Right. And so because I was angry, then I created this hard shell. But it was also the fear of somebody actually looking past the anger to see that I was really broken and that I really desired a father figure.
Let me cut you off there. I hate it when people say not to cut you off and they cut you off.
Yeah, it's all good.
But to cut you off.
To cut me off.
At what point did you realize that's what it really was for you in life? Because that's a very mature understanding of who you are. But yeah. At what point was this teens, college?
No, man, it was in my 20s, man.
Okay.
It was in my 20s when, you know, whether it was playing sports and being successful in sports, entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm.
starting my business, doing well in business, I realized one day that everything that I was doing was really being fueled by me subconsciously telling my daddy, I told you I was enough.
Big F you.
A big F you. You know, that's really what it was. Let me show you that the son that you beat, you know, the son that you hurt. Let me say this real quickly. I love my dad, you know, and things changed. You know, he changed over the years. But before that change come, man, that was the fuel for me. So I was angry. I'm going to show you. You never came to the game. I'm going to show you what you was missing. You know, 3 touchdowns. You wasn't there. Let me show you. All right. Okay, cool. You don't think I was enough to be there for me? Let me at 29 years old, get a house on the golf course in Mansfield National.
Oh, okay. Right? Talk heavy.
When, you understand what I'm saying? On the golf course at 28, 29 years old. Let me show you. And yeah, man, that was a fuel for me.
How far did the, you said your issues with authority, how far did it go? And what I mean by that is, did it materialize into something that couldn't be undone? Did it land you in some very compromising situations? Talk about that.
Yeah, I fought a lot, man.
Okay.
I fought a lot.
Headache?
Yeah, headache, man. Listen, man, I tell people all the time, I just look like this. You know, and the people that really know me, that came up with me, know that me and my brothers, we did a lot of fighting all the time. But I think, you know, in retrospect, I realized it was anger. You know, it was feeling abandoned. It was like, you know, we didn't know how to deal with it at the time. But yeah, man, I got into some trouble.
Yeah.
Never to the point where it put me behind bars.
Okay.
You know, for a long time. You know, I was arrested for a couple of fights.
Yeah.
You know, that type of stuff, man. But you know, I thank God, man, for some of my college coaches that could see the pain that I was hiding behind anger.
Yeah.
You know, I'm grateful for mentors that could look at me and say, no, you're a good dude, you're just angry. And you do have value. You know, you are worth something. You know, we are going to support you, you know, because I kind of created this personification that I don't need nobody.
So I want to contrast your story with mine, and those that have been on the platform any amount of time have heard me say this. I wanted to show my father that I could be a man, but it wasn't to show him up. It was because I put so much distance between us that I was too embarrassed to ask him for help. And kind of my point is, it doesn't matter how you arrive at that place. The distance between the father and the son creates issues that travel with you in life until you get to some point where you can grasp it and understand it and do the work to kind of overcome it. I know a little bit about you. I know you've done some work. How much of your father's character showed up or still shows up in who you are?
Man, this is a true answer, brother. I don't know. Because I don't necessarily know if I really know who my father was. Beyond his addiction, beyond his anger. I know there were glimpses of what I do know about my dad. He was a great athlete.
Yes.
You know, he was a great athlete. He was a ladies' man. But then it kind of goes to the negative. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't until my father was really on his way out that I started to learn a little bit more about him and started to understand and have a little bit of compassion and empathy on his journey because of what he experienced as a child, what he was exposed to. But the bulk of my memory of my father is him coming home and waking me up and beating the hell out of me. You know, that's what I remember the most, you know. And so I can tell you how it did impact me. It impacted me to the point where I was exact opposite with my children.
Okay. How many kids?
Complete opposite.
How many kids do you have?
Five.
Oh. We have that in common.
Yeah.
Have that in common. When first child was what? Boy or girl?
A girl.
Girl.
Yeah.
I think that makes it easier. I had two girls first. And I was so soft that when my son came along, I thought he was a punchbag. Right? Because I had to be so soft with the girls. I could never spank my daughters.
Yeah.
My son spanked them. I don't think he's ever gotten a whipping, not on par with what I grew up with.
Yeah.
But I disciplined him physically for a while until I realized that it didn't take that for him to respond positively.
Yeah.
So I kind of backed off of it. And I may have gone, you know, may have swung too far the other way on the pendulum. But what was it like managing girls first, having the backstory and the history of discipline, and I would imagine unexplained discipline at times, that you grew up with?
Honestly, man, it was easy for me.
Okay.
Because I never wanted my children to feel the way I felt. I never wanted my children to question whether daddy loved them. I never wanted my children to feel like a punching bag.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, I was always very, very intentional about disciplining, you know, but also making sure that they loved me. They knew I loved them. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, man, and maybe I overcorrected, you know, maybe my response to the trauma of my experience as a child caused me to overcorrect. But the reality is my kids are great kids.
Right.
My oldest daughter is married with two kids, you know, didn't have kids out of wedlock, went to college, you know, I got another daughter who's doing extremely, like my kids, I didn't have to beat them to raise them.
Yeah.
You know, and I was intentional about that, man. So it never was an issue to where I felt like I wanted to be anything like my father.
Gotcha.
So I wasn't raising my kids like that.
Gotcha. So this show, I pry.
Okay.
Pry sometimes beyond what people can stand or expect. So just push the button. This is the button. Just push the button when I'm going too far.
Okay.
How many mothers are there of your children?
Three. Yeah.
So math is mathing.
Hey, let's have a think, man. You know,
make sure the math is mathing. Are there things in those experiences, and I want to detach the children from that discussion because you say your children are great. Are there things in those experiences that you
four,
can,
I had to think. Four. I'm sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
I mean, I edit. We can make it work.
Yeah.
We can make it work.
Yeah.
But that's even adds more layers, pun intended, more layers to the question.
Yeah.
How did your upbringing, your exposure to anger, your longing for maybe acceptance, and if I'm putting words, block them, show up in those relationships that led to children, but not
commitment?
Commitment.
You know, that's a great question, man. You asked me about the positive things of my father, you know, and I kind of pivoted back and said, man, most of the things that I learned. And I love my pops, man, but they weren't healthy. So I had to unlearn some of the things that I'd learned.
Yeah.
So one thing for sure, if any of my brothers were sitting here right now, they could quote this verbatim that my father always said, a woman is like a bus stop. If you miss one,
every 15.
Stay there, because every 15 minutes, another one is coming. My father also taught me that women come a dime a dozen. My father also told me that a woman is like a spare tire. You got to always keep one in the trunk. And so growing up, although I had anger You know, I never thought about this until you just asked me this question. That maybe it was a part of me that was seeking acceptance from my father, so I was trying to be like my father unconsciously by multiple women, because my father had multiple women. My uncle's dad, you know, that was kind of the MO of the Hughes men in the family. And so I did not grow up with a value system for women. I didn't. You know, I didn't think that, you know, what my father taught me impacted how I showed up in relationships. That's a fact.
It's amazing what we can latch on to and what we reject coming from the same place.
Man.
Right? Because you, part of you, we had the big F you comment earlier, right?
That's great.
Part of you saw parts of him that you said, I'm absolutely not going to be that.
Yeah.
But some parts of you gravitated towards some things that you saw. And I don't know if that's out of convenience or we just like, we attached to that feeling that came with that. And now you have a basis for always pursuing that feeling because my dad, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So my dad did that. Yeah, so
Papa was a rolling stone.
Papa was a rolling stone.
Yeah.
And as you were saying it in my mind, and I may have mumbled some of the words, I was finishing the comments. Not that my dad said it, but I've heard it.
Yeah.
And to a certain stage of life, here goes me down the mountain. It comes across as sound advice if you understand the context of what they're saying, right? It's like maybe a perceived context is don't get too serious too fast. Take your time, young man. Mama used to say that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you never let it go, then you have relationship that end and may end leaving a child between the two. You go into another relationship, ends leaving a child between the two. Like, so I guess what I'm kind of picking apart is that ever really good advice?
No, it's not. It's not. In any circumstance. You know, and I'm just sitting there thinking, let me tell you what happened to me recently, man. So shout out to my Uncle Roger. I'm sure he'll watch the podcast. But
what up, Aunt?
Uncle Roger, one of my favorite uncles, man. Uncle Roger was a player, Himalayas. You know, I remember being a kid traveling with my uncle. You know what I'm saying? He was making a couple pit stops.
Yeah.
And so Uncle Roger was like my hero. Right. And him and my father and a couple other uncles I had, man, they all had the same mantra, man. Women come a dime a dozen. But I remember calling my uncle maybe about 6 or 7 months ago now. And I said, Unc, why didn't you tell me that at some point that mentality will come back to haunt you?
It's expiration date.
Why didn't you tell me that it ain't no fun when a rabbit got the gun?
Bang, bang.
Why didn't you tell me that be not deceived, for God is not mocked? Whatsoever a man soweth, he shall also reap. And it was, the conversation was on the backside of my divorce.
Mm.
And, you know, I absolutely loved my ex-wife, you know, and this mentality that I had been, that had been ingratiated in my existence didn't work in marriage. Like they're two opposing thought processes. And shout out to my uncle. I love him. It's not a shot, but I realized that all of my uncles, including my father before he passed, were single. And so I had to start to ask myself the question, this ideology, this mantra, this mindset, this macho man, like we don't value women, is cool in your youth. But when you get older, that ain't working, homie. Before my father passed away, I was able to go. My boy, shout out to my boy Troy. We did a documentary of my pops. And one of the things my pops told me was, man, if you get a good woman, value her. Now I'm confused. I'm like, pops, my whole life you told me opposite. But now that you're getting ready to transition, you're telling me something completely different.
Yeah.
And so what I said, as it relates to my son, is I'm not going to tell him to devalue something in life and then reverse it and tell him to value it when I'm getting closer to death.
Yeah.
So this whole time I've had this ideology of not valuing women, and it's impacted my life. I've hurt women. I've messed up relationships. I'm not in a home with my children because I am perpetuating this mindset.
Yeah.
That I discover when I get older that it really ain't true.
How many sons do you have?
Two.
How old?
27 and 12.
Oh, you making this easy for me.
Yeah.
27 and 12, you were definitely two different people.
Completely different, man.
Talk about it. Who you were with the 27-year-old versus who you've become with the 12-year-old?
Man, I was, and you know what? I take that back, man. He 29. I take that back. He 29.
So here's the disclaimer. If you got more than three kids, you get to fudge their ages.
Yeah.
I say it out of repetition, but you got more than three, you get to fudge their ages.
Yeah, yeah. Cause you know, the older he is, the older I am.
And Nile.
So I'm
Nile.
Trying to make him younger so I can remember.
That's my grandmother used to always say she's 39 and holding.
Come on, you know what I'm saying?
Like, grandma, I'm catching you.
But yeah, man, because yeah, he was born in 1996. So he's 29 years old. So, you know, at 29, bro, I was 19 years old. I mean, my son that's 29, when he was born, I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't know nothing about being a father.
Yeah.
Nothing. You know, I tried my best to be there for him, to support him, to love him. But I was still growing into my manhood.
Mm-hmm.
I was still running away from the ghost of being like my father. You understand? Because something I didn't talk about is my father had 18 children.
It's more than a speed bump.
My father had 18 kids, man. And so, you know, when I had my son,
wow.
You know, I'm now in this like, I don't want to be like my dad. So I'm really trying to be there, you know, for my son. And, you know, I had to go off to college. You know, I tried my best, took him to college with me a couple of times. But me and his mom's relationship was just, it was rough.
Yeah.
It was a rough relationship, man. And so I would have handled it a lot differently.
Sure.
At 40 and at 30 than I did at 19.
Sure.
So my two sons got two different dads. My two sons had two completely different experiences. And, you know, I regret that I wasn't who I am today then.
Yeah.
Because he would have got a better version of me. He'd have got a better father. Because I had the same challenges with my youngest son, but I had more wisdom and more perseverance to still fight to be part of his life.
Sure.
I wasn't going to let nothing stop me from being part of his life, because I did not want my children to feel about me the way I felt about my father.
And I was going there. How's your relationship with the 29-year-old?
Man, it's similar, but not the same, you know? And so we, you know, we talk, we're cordial, you know? But you know, it was some different circumstances there.
Sure.
You know, it was some different circumstances there.
Are there things that you know he didn't get from you or that he got from you that have impacted who he is?
I think with him, the orchestrated anger caused him not to get from me what he needed.
Your anger. His anger.
His anger. Yeah. His anger. Because, you know, a kid can get angry when they feel like daddy doesn't want them.
Sure.
When they feel like daddy doesn't want to be here. When they're watching daddy love other kids, but why isn't he loving me this way? And the kid doesn't understand that all the time, that ain't really what it is.
Yeah.
There's some other factors there that you don't know about right now. And because you don't know about those factors, now daddy becomes the boogeyman. He's the poltergeist. He's the candy man. He's the bad guy. He's Freddy Krueger. And so now I'm angry at my dad But then when I get older and I can kind of assess the situation better, well, my dad wasn't as bad as I thought he was.
Yeah, but that lie has been the truth for so long that it's tough to undo in a conversation.
It's hard to undo. And even when you have a conversation, you still default back to or resort back to default settings.
Yeah.
And so, it's tough, you know, because it's like, yo, you know, I am, for all intents and purposes, the same person that I've always been, just with more resources, more wisdom, more patience. Man, I've always loved my kids, man. You know, there is a track record of me supporting and loving. And sometimes, and I'm speaking mostly to my oldest now, mm-hmm. I have to remind him, yo, I was there just as much. You know, you live with me. You was at college with me. You know, you don't remember these things because you've attached yourself on to the times where you feel like I wasn't there so much that you forget the times that I was.
Yeah.
You know, the times that you lived with me and went to school and I would come to school and, you know, PTA meetings, and all other stuff. And so it's something that we're working through.
How did that impact your desire to be a dad again and again? Where is he fall in the pecking order?
Yeah, he's number two.
Number two.
Yeah.
So again and again. And again.
Yeah, man. I love kids, man, and I love family. You know, the crazy thing is the one thing that I did not really get to experience growing up is the one thing I've always desired as an adult is that nuclear family. You know, and I did the best that I could at 19 years old.
Sure.
You know, I was 19. It's kind of like I talked about. I think sometimes, man, we have to stop holding our 60-year-old parents accountable to something that they did at 20.
Yeah.
You know, and so the grace that I had for my father, I pray one day my son will have that grace for me. Yeah. But I was 19. I didn't know how to be a dad. I didn't know
how to be a man.
How to be a man. You know, I didn't know how to push through the resistance I was getting from the other side.
So that I've only seen that from the periphery. I've had friends that weren't allowed access to their children. Like literally children taken away from them and moved across country.
Hmm.
Right. And it got to a point where the hope became, I'm closer to my child being 18 now than I was 7 years ago. I'm focusing on what can happen at 18 and after.
Yeah.
What are the challenges having the relationship with your older son, having the grace now, or having had the grace before your father passed, so you understand that dynamic, you're waiting for him to come into that, and you have a son that's 17 years his junior that you got to walk down a path.
Yeah.
Like, how does that work?
It goes back to, man, that there's duality in life, you know? My mentor preached a message one time when he said, sometimes in life, it's the best of times and the worst of time at the same time, you know? And so I was just sharing with a good friend of mine. I said, parenting is not just from 0 to 18.
Don't stop.
But oftentimes it continues to go and you get a second chance at being a dad. And I feel like with my older son, I'm getting a second chance to show him who I really am, right? To show him the father that I really am, to show him the father that I really want him to be.
Sure.
You know, and so.
And he has children.
At the same time, identifying the mistakes that I made with him and trying to correct them here.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm just an overall better father to my 12-year-old son, my 15-year-old daughter, and my 19-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
You know, they got a different daddy. They got a whole different experience.
Sure.
You know, so.
You met my 21-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
Who's a mother, gave me a grandchild. Actually, my grandchild is 7 months today. Elijah Grace.
but 21 and my youngest child, my son, is 10. They got very different versions of me having different revelations, different understandings,
yeah,
different walks with God at different points in my life, different value system of what family really means. Because it's one thing to present as,
yeah,
right? I got my family here. We're all in the same house. I'm taking care of things financially, but maybe not mentally or spiritually. And it took for me running after corporate and corporate doing what corporate does to me, spit me out, mm-hmm. which I was kind of cool. I thought I was cool with at the time. I've been out almost 2.5 years now, but that was my shakeup to realize who I wasn't and what I was attaching myself to.
That's good.
In those moments. What is important for you guiding final chapter? This son? Final chapter?
Done.
Okay. Mine is medically done. I'm medically retired from that. Still enjoy practicing, but you know, I'm medically.
Praise God for the practice.
Medically retired from that. It'd be a whole different conference. It'd be a different podcast. Another child show.
It would have to be a miracle for me. Like
I think the Son of God took, that's all the miracles I can give to that. Yeah. I can lend to that. That's the only immaculate conception that's going to ride with me.
It's just not ideal for me at this point in my life.
But anyhow, how do you, what's important as you walk this young man? I met him, energetic, loves being around. I've only seen him around you, but I can see that he values you and proximity. What's important with this version of, because this is a version of you?
Man, let me tell you something. That question almost brought tears to my eyes.
Ooh.
And let me tell you why. With my older children, I felt like giving them stuff compensated for them not having my time.
Oh, you on my street.
And not me being present.
On my street.
So my kids always had stuff. They always had the shoes, they always had the clothes, they always had the big trips, they always had that.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Because if I couldn't give them me, I could at least give them some stuff.
At minimum.
Now I understand that the most important thing that I can give my kids is me. And so the difference is, as I sit back and I look, I'm seeing my older son just want me to be there. And I'm saying, I can't be there, but here go the stuff. Versus my youngest son, he gets my presence, you know, and you saw him this past weekend.
Sure.
And he's kind of like my videographer, he's my photographer, all that good stuff, right? But I only have him operating the camera so he can get the stuff.
Sure. Yeah, gotcha.
You understand what I'm saying? So
more caught than taught.
He's getting the stuff, you know, and that's important to me now, man. Understanding that, pouring back into my children and giving them time with me to get to know me, because as a father, you help define who your child is, you know, and I didn't know that at the time. I was just loving them the only way I knew how to love, you know. And as I grew and I developed, I realized that that wasn't the important thing. You know, actually, you had Reggie on, man. Okay. And Reggie said something one time that changed my life. He said, man, you ain't got to be perfect, but you got to be present. It was Reggie and that t-shirt that made me pivot.
Salute the father figure.
Yeah, shout out to father figure. And he said, you ain't got to be perfect, but you got to be present, man. And I thought to myself, presence.
Yeah.
Presence. I mean, like Christmas presents and birthday presents, they don't amount to presents. You know what I'm saying? And so that's how I'm different now, man. I just try to spend as much time with my kids as I possibly can. I make the sacrifices to be there for them because they're not going to remember the stuff you got them, but they'll always remember how you showed up.
Yeah. So you're, you mentioned your divorce earlier, and that's to your youngest child's mother?
No. Me and my ex-wife, we didn't have any children together.
Okay.
Yeah, but me and my son's mom, we were together for 6 years. Hmm.
Now that makes it more interesting to me, and my mind just works in a twisted sense, because what did your youngest son see of you as a husband from afar?
Oh, man, and that was so important to me. And I mentioned it Saturday. I said that my son did not get a chance to see me love his mama properly. So I'm very selective on who, if anybody, I bring around my son, because I don't want to perpetuate the narrative that my father gave me. But I do want my son to see me love a woman properly, to communicate with a woman properly, to honor and respect a woman properly. That is something that I desire, you know? And so I'm very selective. He loved my ex-wife, you know? He loved the fact that, you know, she had a son, so he had a brother at the time. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
So it was a dynamic that he was a little bit apprehensive about warming up to in the beginning.
Yeah.
But by the time we was locked in, he was like, yo, you know.
So how does that work now? Because we often focus on the dynamic that's beating us in the face, right? And maybe we discount how our children feel about a thing. But if he saw that child as a brother and now the access is different, like how do those things, can you see if you even want to say anything about it?
Yeah, man, it was tough on him. It was tough, man. You know, it was tough on him for a while, you know, but children are resilient, man. Sometimes, unfortunately, they
have to be. Is that a cop out? I'm sorry. Is that a cop out? Not for,
well, no, that's a great question.
Take it personally if you want to, yeah. but we like, that's a common thing.
Yeah.
Your kids will bounce back. Yeah. You move every 2 years. You get military, you get whatever it is, your kid. I mean, but it's.
Unfortunately, sometimes they have to. You understand what I'm saying? Because life is go life. You know, one thing for sure, two things for certain, man. The Bible says the rain falls on the just and the unjust.
And the unjust, yeah.
So you can't. Idealistically, man, you would create an environment of consistency, of safety, of health, of nurturing for all children.
Yeah.
But the challenge with marriage is that you're dealing with two adults that have the autonomy to make a decision that, hey, I want to be here or I don't want to be here. And their decision impacts the children. And as much as I don't want to hurt my kids, I love my kids. You know, we fathers, man, it's jail of hell behind our babies. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But now we have to deal with the reality that this no longer is a family unit. And I seen, you know, if I'm honest, man, I didn't even know how to tell him for a while.
Yeah, I was.
I didn't even know how to tell him, man, because I knew how much he loved her. I knew how much he loved, you know, her son.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that made me a good father or a bad father, but I was so protective of him that I didn't even want to tell him.
So her son and you, what was that relationship?
Good relationship. Yeah, great relationship. You know, I love kids, man, and I understand the psychology of kids, and I wanted to make sure he understood that I was not a replacement of his father.
Gotcha.
But simply just an extension of a man who loves him.
It's important. Yeah.
You know, and so we had a great relationship. That was a little homie, man. You know.
How did that play into your decision? Because one thing that, so my wife and I started another podcast before I even got into this one. Working name now is Healthy Marriage is Dope, right? And it's not about marriage being perfect, but having the tools and working through things. But one thing that I started questioning is why people clap at when you say the number of years you've been married, right? Me and my wife, at the time of this recording, in 2 weeks, it'll be 20 years for us. And somewhere around 17, 18, I just started like, what are we celebrating, right? What do you know? What do you assume about this relationship that causes you to celebrate in that way and think that this is a good thing? And where I'm going with it is sometimes two people can attain years of marriage and their relationship is terrible because they're staying together for convenience, for children, for business reasons, things of that nature. So how much of a consideration was the impact to your relationship with her child, with your child who pseudo brothers, and maybe any of your children as you were making that decision? Like, how does that weigh into the, whether it's their resilience level, how will it impact them, or maybe your embarrassment level of this thing didn't work? You're a very successful businessman. How do you figure that out? And
man, listen, let me tell you something. So first of all, let me address your first statement. I disagree. I think that if you made it 20 years, I'm going to celebrate that period. Regardless of whether it was healthy, regardless if you stayed. And I didn't mean to say I disagree because
I love it.
I think that longevity, we should celebrate longevity. We got so many, the average marriage in this country lasts, I think, 7 years,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you made it 20 years, that means you almost tripled, you know, what most marriages are today. So regardless of whether you guys were happy, because marriage is not about happy, to me, happiness, marriage is about commitment. It's about covenant. It's about you stood before God and said that we would stay together. So if you stay together because of the kids, whatever the case, I celebrate people who stay together because it's so easy to break up nowadays. It's so easy to walk away. Everything is so transient nowadays, you know? And it's like, yo, you and your wife, you said 20 years?
20.
20? I'm going to celebrate. I don't care how many nights you slept in another room.
Yeah.
I don't care how many nights y'all thought about breaking up. At the end of the day, you didn't. You stayed together.
And you know what? That actually answered my question, but most people can't answer that question.
Yeah.
And when it causes them to think otherwise, the message is to them to think about why they make the decisions that they make. I don't care if you celebrate me and my wife. It's cool. But whether you celebrate or not doesn't dictate if we're going to make it to 21.
Right.
What I'm saying is have a reason, have an understanding of what you're actually putting this energy towards.
Yeah.
Right. Have you thought through all of those other things that could be a scenario and why you still want to celebrate somebody making it that long? Right. Yeah. And we're not talking about abuse or anything like that and sticking around things like that. But that's why I challenge people. And most people don't have an answer. You had an answer.
Absolutely.
So it's not even disagreeing with me.
You know why I had an answer?
No.
I'm a LeBron James fan.
And that'll wrap it up.
No, man, we ain't got to wrap it up.
How old are you?
Listen, I'm 47. How?
You know what? I take that back because you said fan. I had a guy that was 32. Matter of fact, his episode came out today and he was talking about LeBron being a GOAT. And I couldn't.
And he is.
You doubled down.
And he is.
Let's get back on track, bro.
Okay, let's get back on track. But listen.
This is not going to go.
You are like LeBron James. 20 years in the game. And you don't get to disqualify
mm-hmm.
a man's ability to stay at the top of the game for 2 decades.
Sure.
So you know, he's the lead. You know, they say he's not a great scorer. He's the leading scorer in the NBA, in the history of the NBA. It's because he played 20 years.
I think he's fantastic.
But he conditioned himself to last 20 years.
I think that's fantastic.
Right? And so we got to celebrate longevity.
I celebrate him.
He off his mark right now. You got to see his face.
I celebrate him. He's just not Jordan. That's the bottom line. I don't care. I don't care and so what? So what? And I don't care.
Okay.
Right? Let's get back on track.
LeBron to go, but go ahead.
I edit, so we'll see how that comes out.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
See how that comes out. But the other piece of it was contrasting like success outside of marriage to not so much in marriage.
Man, that was tough, bro. You know,
I know you thought you was running from that one, but we ain't.
Yeah, no. And listen, I think, you know, when I speak, man, I like to speak truth, even if it's a hard truth, because vulnerability and truth is how you provoke change.
Mm-hmm.
And I never want anybody to see me on podcasts and TV and magazines and thinks that I'm perfect. No, man, I made mistakes. Yeah. And failure hurts. I'm an athlete, man. And so I've been conditioned to win, you know. And the Bible says that wherever I place the sole of my feet, I shall possess the land. And can I tell you, brother, that in most situations in my life, I've always won. Except for marriage. That hurt. Yeah.
What does that mean? Because I commend you for stating that it hurt, but what does that mean?
Which part?
That it hurt. Like what is the hurt of it?
The hurt is that I pushed past the ideology of my father. The hurt is I gave it everything that I had. The hurt is fighting against the thought process that everything that you have is not enough. The hurt is, damn, I don't know if I ever want to do this again.
That was my next question.
The hurt is that I choose right.
Yeah.
You know, the hurt is, did I choose right or was I just the wrong person? The hurt is love for me doesn't leave, but it left. It's a myriad of things it's a myriad of emotions that you could go through when you start talking about the pain of divorce. It is two people becoming one and now not so much. It is the engrafting of lives together and now the engrafting is beautiful, but the tear is treacherous. It is, now I'm bleeding from places that I don't even know how to stop the bleeding.
Didn't know I was cut.
I didn't even know I was cut, right? I didn't even know it would hurt me this much.
Yeah.
Because this is polar opposite to the ideology that I was raised on. The personification that I presented to the public for a long time is, I'm the man, I'm him. But then you get married, and it's like, well, yo, this is what I really want. And now the question is, do I have enough courage? I said this before, man, and this is horrible. I grew up fighting. I grew up angry. We talked about that. Man, I think I fear divorce more than I fear fighting five men. I'm more scared of that than I am of anything else, man. So
is it because you have less physical control of it?
You have zero control.
Yeah.
Zero. Listen, man. Rob Bass said it in the 80s, man. It takes two to make a thing go right. The challenge with marriage is you just never know.
Dice roll.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, fam, like when everything happened, it was like, wow. I had no idea, you know? But you have to realize that they got their own mind. They got their own thoughts. You know what I'm saying? And I can't read your thoughts. I can't read your mind. I can go off of your actions. We can have conversations. But are you telling me the truth about where you really are? And then boom, voila. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm ready for that again, Brody.
I think you get married based on experience, but you have a marriage based on hope. Because you don't know who that person's going to be.
Man,
you don't know who you're going to be.
Yeah.
And how compatible the different yous are going to be at any different phase of that thing. One thing you said was love doesn't leave. Did that impact, and let me stop saying, have you redefined what love is? Because either love doesn't leave and it left, so it wasn't love, or love doesn't leave and it left, but you were wrong about what love is.
Or both.
Let's talk about it.
Or both. I think what I've evolved to now, and I don't know, man, you know, maybe this is a protective thought process, but I think love is seasonal. And I think you have to be, the book of Ecclesiastes says that for everything, there's a season.
Time and purpose.
And I used to, because of my childhood trauma, because of my attachment style, I felt like if you love me, you'll never leave me. But that's not always the case because you can love somebody and still leave them.
It's in the best interest of both for you to leave.
You know, and so I had to really change that And really, I kind of arrived at this after my divorce. Because I'm like, yo, I know that I really love this woman. And to keep it a bean, I know she loved me.
Right.
So why are we not together? Right? And so now I've kind of arrived at this space that whether it's healthy or unhealthy, man, that sometimes, man, love does leave. Sometimes, you know, love does leave. And maybe it's a defense mechanism for me to guard myself from being hurt again. But I don't, which is probably why I'm single right now, because I used to feel like if you love me, you would never leave. Mm-hmm. It's how I used to feel.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, hell, you can love somebody and still leave them. So maybe, just maybe, love is seasonal. That's why I celebrate people that in spite of every season, they stay together. I'm going to celebrate 20 years because there were seasons where you could have made a decision to leave, but you stayed.
Yeah.
Because most love, especially in 2025, love is seasonal because you can love me today and leave me tomorrow.
Microwave.
It's, you know, and so maybe my ideology of love was antiquated. Maybe it was trauma-based. I don't know what it was, but for me, my mentor says that anything that stayed couldn't leave and anything that left couldn't stay. So if you left me, it was just your time to go. And I have to stop associating your presence or absence with love. Because if you call my ex-wife right now, she'll tell me, I still love you, but you still left. So maybe your love was just for a season. I don't know.
Would you do it again?
Man, let me tell you something. Do what again?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we can dance, but I mean, was you?
I know you're not asking me what I think you asked me.
Absolutely.
Man, let me tell you something, man. My knee-jerk reaction answer is no. At the core of me, my answer is no. But when I filter beyond the fear and the hurt,
mm-hmm.
I love marriage, bro. I love being a husband. Yeah, I absolutely love it, man. But
what would it take?
I can't believe that I'm saying this on camera. But my divorce damaged me.
Mm-hmm.
It did. It damaged me. And listen, no shade to her, man. I want nothing but the best for her, 1,000%. But I am a different man. I'm a different man because maybe I ran into that thing, man, thinking that love was enough to sustain. And nah, it ain't. It ain't. You know. And so
no.
Jerry Flowers in Houston said something one time, man, that really changed the way I see relationships. He said, man, you lay down with how they look, but you live with how they think. And for me to even consider marrying again, I would have to take a 30-day vacation in their mind. I need to know how you think. I need to know how you view life. I need to know all of that things. Because the Bible says, how can two walk together unless they agree? And at this stage of my life, it's not about the physical agreement, but the mental, emotional, and spiritual agreement. If I'm not getting that, I'm cool, man.
So that's more about qualifying her. What changes or what work do you have to do to qualify you to go at it again?
To have the desire to go at it again. You ain't gonna let me get away with that. Man, I think Fantasia has a song, and one of her lyrics, she said, man, sometimes you got to lose to win. And if I'm honest, man, I think that experience of divorce really changed me, not for the negative, but it changed me for the better. It forced me to see me. It forced me to see how I was showing up as a father, how I was showing up as a husband, and showing up, whether good or bad, you know. It made me listen more. I don't experience me.
True story.
You understand what I'm saying? So I don't experience me. And so what I had to do is stop leaning off how I thought I was showing up. And man, let me do some surveys. You know, how do I show up?
Focus group.
You know, let's do a focus group on some of my past experience. Like, and you know what I found out, man? It was a consistency in how I was showing up.
Yeah.
And I had to change that. I had to go back and work through some of those things.
We're going to start the rap, man, but I'm going to give you this question that typically give all the guests, especially when I was guest base, no co-host. So the podcast is Dear Son, tagline, like I mentioned before, is what I wish my father told me. But I'm going to flip it on you. What is something that you're intentional about with your son that he'll never have to wish you told him?
My son will always know that his father loves him. My son knows that manhood is not just about being stoic, but it's about embracing your emotions and your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I teach my son, have feelings. Just don't let your feelings have you. I teach my son to value women. That outside of your relationship with Jesus Christ, one of the greatest decisions you can make as a man is what woman to align with.
Yep.
I teach my son to protect his seed. I teach my son in life what my father tried to tell me in death.
Ooh.
I'm grateful my father told me what he told me because now it allows me to reverse engineer what he said and give my son more knowledge. Me and my son talk scripture. I talk to my son more about purpose than about stuff. So one of the last conversations me and my son had just 2 days ago is I told him that everybody's not going to like you, but the most important thing is that you know who you are and you like yourself. Those things my son will never have to question. He will never have to question whether his daddy loved him. He will never have to question whether his daddy sacrificed for him. He will never have to question whether his daddy supported him. He will never have to question whether his daddy taught him the most important things in life.
Hmm.
Not about stuff, but it's about purpose. It's about passion. It's about identity. You know, it's about being the best version of you. It's about perseverance and overcoming, you know, objectives and adversity.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that I'm teaching my son. While I also teach him business and that type of stuff. But man, I'm giving, you know, here's a short answer. I'm giving my son what I wish my father would have gave me.
Starts with you.
Yeah.
Starts with you. Man, this has been worth my time. I hope it was worth yours. I know it's been worth the audience. You mentioned business at the end and we didn't get to it. Somewhat by design, but I want to give you an opportunity to share with the audience a little bit of that success as well. What you do, how you serve.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, I ain't punched the clock in 22 years, man.
Mm.
And so I have started 3 7-figure businesses, a marketing company, tax business, and a trucking company. And so I do those 3 things. Also, I do business coaching, speaking, mentoring. Those 3 vehicles really have really just led me to where I'm at today.
Gotcha.
And that is the ability to pour into others and share my knowledge and my wisdom with others. And so that's what I'm really passionate about.
Oh.
You know, so my business is, although I 1000% celebrate the fact that without a business mentor, without business funding, without support, I started 3 7-figure businesses out the mud and employed hundreds of people, millions of dollars, did extremely well for myself. But I think that was a vehicle to just get me to where I am today. And that is just a person that loves God's people, man, and want to see men be better fathers and be better husbands and not make some of the mistakes I made.
Ooh. That's why we talk about them here, man.
Yeah.
How can people find you?
Man, listen, I'm easy to find. You know, you just go to you know, just Corey L. Hughes. The Corey L. Hughes on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Clubhouse, whatever the case may be, YouTube. You know, I'm getting ready to launch a podcast.
Let's go.
It's going to be called The Himothy Project.
Let's go.
And so you'll be able to find that on YouTube as well, man. I'm excited, man. I'm excited about this season, man.
I'm excited for you, man. All of that information will be linked down below. Before I get out of here, I always want to shout out my wife, lovekeishaj.com. You can find her children's book that I don't have a copy of, but it'll be an insert and overlay on the video. For those that listen via audio only, they'll be linked down below, but very good reviews, very well illustrated, very practical, but meaningful lessons in it. I would recommend it for your young scholars of color, 5 to 15. You can read it to them, you know, younger than that age, unless they're reading on reading level, younger than that. But it's a great book. My wife is dope. And I keep saying it every episode to keep me accountable that my goal this year is to bring her home from the 9-to-5 rat race because I came out and she went back for a period. And I need life to be different.
Come on.
Life to be different. But that's going to do it. My book is linked down below. I was just talking to a partner before this episode and said you need to promote it more. So, hey guys, look at me. I do things.
What's your book, man? Hold on before you
Dear Son, 20 Life Prompts to Facilitate Effective Parenting. So where it was birthed out of the quotes that I used to put up on IG would get responses, right? And somebody said, man, it'd be nice to have a collection. So I organized them. I also gave you the thought or the scenario that led to that. And it's a life experience.
Why don't you promote that more?
I don't like telling people to look at me.
Why?
It's just not in my nature.
Why?
Me.
Y'all see how I just took over the interview?
Yeah. It's going to go deeper than what I can explain because I don't know. I celebrate people. I don't like to be celebrated.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Were you celebrated when you were young?
Absolutely.
You were?
Mm-hmm. But here's another piece of that. And I mentioned it in a different episode. When I was young, my crew, they used to call us too cool, mm-hmm. right? Because they thought we just never smile. Mm-hmm. I took that to heart. So I don't, like it's my very first real corporate job, $42,000 a year. Who gonna say what? I was making 26 before that. Anyway, this was back in 04.
Gotcha.
My boss told me she's gonna give me a smile coach and it pissed me off because I thought she was being funny. There was another young black guy professional that walked around smiling and she was like, I'm going to pair you with him because he needs to teach you some stuff. And I didn't get it and I rejected it. As I climbed the corporate ladder through merit, not relationships, that was some of the feedback that I got when I was at the executive level. Like executives interviewing me for an executive role that's their peer. One guy told me point blank, he's like, Dad, we don't know. Like, this is the first time in this interview I see you laugh. Mm-hmm. I've just always taken it to be serious. Let my work speak for me. You got to work 4 times harder than anybody beside you of whatever color. I mean, we know what the specifics are, but just that's just the mentality that I've had. So it's always been go, 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 do the thing, let the work speak. Not a whole lot of, hey, look at me doing the work.
So let me.
This is bonus footage.
Yeah, it is bonus, but make sure you put this footage in there, right? Don't try to run from this footage. But let me just say this, man. I approach you about doing this podcast.
That's true.
I get people to reach out to me all the time, and I say no.
I see what you did there.
You know why I wanted to do your podcast? Because I believe in your product. I believe in what you put out. I love the messaging about fatherhood. It's extremely essential to our community. It's a book I'm working on. That I will release this year's title, It Had to Happen. And I couldn't understand why, you know, you said 2 years ago, corporate America spit you out. Well, maybe they spit you out for this. So maybe this book that you have that you should be promoting more will well over compensate for what they spit out.
Yeah.
Because you talked about my business. My businesses came off the backside of Enterprise Rent-A-Car firing me. I was a corporate American. They fired me. And 20 years later, I ain't looked back. And so I had a good mentor tell me one time that a closed mouth don't get fed. I'm only here because to me, one of the greatest assets that God gives us is time. I don't waste my time. So if I'm spending my time with you, it's because I see value. And I'm telling you, promote that book more because more men need to understand because there's so many men that don't know how to be fathers.
Yeah.
That we searching. Our daddy wasn't around. Our daddy was abusive and we don't know how to be dads. And maybe, just maybe, you are a source to help us get back on track that will impact the next generation. So I'm going to say this. It is selfish of you not to promote so much wisdom.
That'll do it. Received, and I appreciate you.
We need you.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
Before the waterworks start, that's going to do it. We appreciate you guys. God bless you. Peace.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.